Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Shortly after the episode you're about to hear was published, Russia said that it would resume participation in a deal to allow Ukrainian grain exports. Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu is on the brink of a political comeback. Plus, with global food supplies on the line, we'll get an update on the status of Ukraine's Black Sea grain exports.
There's a lot of people watching this because the price of corn and wheat has already been rising with all this uncertainty around these exports.
And we'll look at why catalytic converter theft is on the rise. It's Wednesday, November 2nd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin today in Israel, where former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on the cusp of a political comeback after the country's fifth election in 4 years yesterday. Wall Street Journal correspondent Dov Lieber in Tel Aviv has the latest as the vote count continues.
Though we have the bulk of the results now, there's still a chance that this entire election could change because at least two parties that rival Mr. Netanyahu are close to the electoral threshold, and it robbed Mr. Netanyahu of his parliamentary majority that he needs to form a coalition. But as it appears now, he is very much on course to be able to form another government. Throughout the election campaign, Mr. Netanyahu has had what he calls his nationalist bloc. In that bloc is his own Likud party, two ultra-Orthodox parties, and an alliance of very conservative lawmakers in the Religious Zionist Party. And if he forms a coalition with just those parties, it would be one of the most right-wing and conservative and religious governments in Israel's history.
Turning to the U.S. now, Democrats are pushing an 11th-hour economic message to older voters ahead of next week's midterm elections that Republicans will put entitlements at risk if they take control of Congress. President Biden made that argument Tuesday night at a campaign stop in Florida, describing Social Security and Medicare as being under siege by the GOP. Republicans in the House and Senate have called for a range of changes to the programs, which they say would ensure their future and curb federal spending. Streaming giant Netflix is set to roll out an ad-supported tier of its service in a dozen countries as talks continue with studios over content. Netflix says that advertiser demand for its Basic with Ads plan is strong, but according to people familiar with the matter, the company continues to haggle with several major studios for the right to run ads against their content in the new service or put their content on the new ad tier. Netflix's new service is scheduled to launch in the U.S. tomorrow. Twitter boss Elon Musk says that blocked users won't be let back on the social media platform until the company has a clear policy in place, which he said will take at least a few weeks. The comments come as Musk, a self-described free speech absolutist, works to address concerns that Twitter will be subject to looser content moderation under his ownership and welcome back personalities who were removed from the platform. In other market news today, CVS Health, Costco and Qualcomm will lead another day of quarterly earnings reports. And of course, it is Fed Day, with the U.S. Federal Reserve set to announce its latest interest rate decision. We will be streaming Chairman Jerome Powell's remarks about the Fed's decision at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on WSJ.com. Keep an eye on your car's catalytic converter. The cylindrical hunk of metal within the exhaust system of most cars and trucks may not be a car part that you've given much thought to in the past, but catalytic converters have become a lucrative target for criminal groups across the U.S., sending law enforcement agencies and lawmakers scrambling to respond. Wall Street Journal senior Midwest correspondent Joe Barrett has been documenting the rapid increase in catalytic converter theft across the U.S. and its causes. And he joins us now from Chicago with the latest. Hey, Joe, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
Joe, for some people, this story may be all too familiar. For others, they may not be aware of what's going on here at all. Break it down for us. What's happening?
Well, these thefts have been really ramping up across the U.S. and basically driven by the high price of these metals. Rhodium, palladium, and platinum are some of the most, you know, valuable metals in the world. They're used in a lot of different things. But one of the chief things is these catalytic converters, and thieves go in and steal them, sell them into a bigger ring that then packages them up, either sells them to a recycler or actually takes them to an illegal smelting operation and turns them directly back into a precious metal. One insurance group has tracked like a 200% rise in the last year and then like 1900% from the year before that. So they really have been taken off. And, you know, some of these rings, when they aggregate enough of them, 44,000 catalytic converters stolen in Portland, Oregon, that would net about $22 million for the thieves.
And how is this not being stopped? It seems like a pretty noisy type of theft and one that could be easily spotted.
Well, for one thing, you know, there are cars pretty much everywhere. And, you know, the thieves find places where there are, you know, large trucks that have valuable ones or just some car in a dark corner somewhere. They use a rapid jack and they have a, you know, a little battery powered saw and they can be in and out in about a minute.
Joe, is this just going to continue unabated? What is the law enforcement response to this?
Yeah, they're trying to paint various catalytic converters in an indelible paint that would make it look a little bit less likely that somebody would want to steal it. They sometimes stamp them. They are ramping up these enforcement efforts by breaking up these bigger rings. Several states have passed new legislation that would aim to get this under control. But other people think that, you know, really national legislation is the way to go so that there's a level playing field everywhere and can't just steal something, you know, maybe you steal it in a strict state and then take it to a looser state. So sort of national legislation might be the answer so that people can't really sell them to recyclers anymore without proper ID and identification of the vehicle that it came from.
That was Wall Street Journal senior Midwest correspondent Joe Barrett joining us from Chicago. Joe, thank you.
No problem. Take care.
Coming up over the weekend, Russia withdrew from a deal aimed at letting Ukraine's grain exports safely transit the Black Sea in order to reach world markets. We'll get an update on where that deal stands now after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
Before Russia's invasion earlier this year, Ukraine exported some 10% of the world's wheat and was a key supplier for countries in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia, where people are the most vulnerable to the rising cost of food around the world. In July, Turkey, Ukraine, Russia, and the UN signed a deal to let ships safely export that grain out of three key Black Sea ports. But over the weekend, Russia abruptly backed out of that deal, saying it couldn't guarantee the safety of civilian cargo ships. Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Jared Malson has been tracking the ensuing efforts this week to keep the grain export corridor running smoothly, and he joins us now from Istanbul with the very latest. Jared, hello.
Thank you.
Remind us why Russia pulled out of this deal over the weekend.
So Russia said it was suspending its involvement in the agreement, citing security concerns. They've accused Ukraine of using this safe corridor in the Black Sea that is used to transport grain to attack Russian forces in Crimea. The UN has said that there's absolutely no truth to those accusations, and there's no evidence that that happened. But Russia's been complaining for a few months now about the agreement. They've made a number of claims saying that not enough of the grain is going to poor countries. We also know that there's very little evidence for that too. Lots of the grain has gone to countries like Somalia, Egypt, India, Yemen, Afghanistan, and so on. They also want the West to help free up Russian exports of food and fertilizer products, which they say have been kind of bottled up by sanctions. The US and Europe also say that that's not true, that they don't sanction food products coming out of Russia, but there may be a kind of chilling effect that the sanctions have had in terms of companies being willing to actually ship products out of Russia.
Jared, what has Russia's withdrawal from this agreement actually meant so far in practice?
So it has disrupted the functioning of this grain corridor. So you had this shipping lane in the Black Sea that had been used to transport almost 10 million tons of grain since August out of these three ports all around Odessa in Ukraine, in this very complex operation where you had Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, and the UN all working together to make sure that these ships got out safely. And that was working up until a few days ago when Russia said it was suspending its involvement. And everyone else has been kind of scrambling to figure out what this means. Today, no ships are moving. Yesterday, some ships did come out of Odessa, three of them. And then tomorrow, there's supposed to be another convoy of eight ships. So it seems very much like a day-to-day thing right now where you have the UN working with Turkey and Ukraine, the other two signatories of the deal, to sustain it in spite of Russia not being involved anymore. The Russians have also threatened to stop the ships themselves, basically intervening militarily in the corridor. So there's just a lot of uncertainty right now. There's also questions about whether insurers will be able to provide coverage for these ships going into the corridor going forward. So just generally a lot of questions, and I think everyone trying to answer those along with these diplomatic efforts to try to save the deal.
About those diplomatic efforts, what exactly are they working toward, and what's the chance they'll be successful?
Right. So Turkey and the UN especially, they are pushing hard to get Russia back involved in the deal. And Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said yesterday that he was confident that they could come up with a solution that would get Russia back involved. The UN has said that this situation where they're pressing ahead without the Russians, that that's a temporary and extraordinary measure that they're taking. So they're really saying, we're coming up with these solutions right now and we want to get the deal up and running again. On the other hand, what the Ukrainians have said really is like Russia has made their intentions clear. They're using food as a weapon and they want to tighten this stranglehold that they have on Black Sea grain exports. And what these Ukrainian and Western officials will say is this is part of Russia's broader strategy to coerce Ukraine, the West, and also these third countries in the Middle East and Africa and so on to drop their support for Ukraine and kind of pressure Ukraine into giving up its resistance to the Russian invasion.
And in terms of how Russia is responding or might respond to this, what have we heard from Moscow so far?
They've made a number of statements where they've pushed back on what the UN and Turkey are doing to sustain the deal and basically saying it's unacceptable for ships to move in the corridor right now. The thing is that they might not have very many options in order to stop these ships from moving. The corridor is functioning safely, although at a lower capacity than before. And the question is, what do they do now? Will they actually use their naval forces to intercept one of these ships? Or would they bomb the port in Odessa, which is something that they did back in July, right after the agreement was signed? And obviously there's a lot of people watching this because the price of corn and wheat has already been rising with all of this uncertainty around these exports.
That was Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Jared Malson joining us from Istanbul. Jared, thank you for the update.
Thank you.
And finally, in recent years, shoppers became accustomed to using their homes as dressing rooms, as retailers let them buy several items online and decide what to keep or send back without paying shipping or restocking fees. But now, retailers from Athleta to Zara are shortening refund and exchange windows. And according to a survey of 300 retailers by Inmar Intelligence, twice as many brands no longer offer free return shipping versus just a year ago. Wall Street Journal consumer trends reporter Rachel Wolf says that for many brands, the pace of returns, which according to the National Retail Federation totaled more than $760 billion in merchandise last year, was simply too much.
During the pandemic, retailers bent over backwards to make returns easy on consumers and sort of created this returns monster where people would do this thing called bracket buying, where they ordered items in multiple colors and sizes and styles so that they could figure out what they liked best once they actually got all the items in their door. And often by the time retailers get those items back, it's past the season where they were going to be sold. And now retailers are dealing with just these mountains of returns that are clogging warehouse aisles, costing them billions, and often contributing to a lot of waste.
And if you're stuck with a pile of no longer free returns, Rachel suggests going to a physical retail store where many brands still want your foot traffic, even if they won't pay for your postage. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.